realizations from chapter 10. Just go. Anything that struck you in that chapter? I'm thinking of one particular item, but I would like to hear also from you what struck you, what might have struck you from reading this chapter or hearing this chapter. Chapter 10, where Krishna, the departure of Krishna for Dwarka. He's in Hastinapur. We've heard the incident of Ashvatthama and Krishna saving Parikshit and hearing Kunti's wonderful prayers and then staying even longer to be at present at the disappearance of Grandfather Bhishma. But then this chapter, departure of Krishna, what struck you in that chapter? Anybody want to offer? Yes?
Yeah, it's really nice how the ladies who are on the rooftops and didn't even see Krishna, they were just so blissful and so happy just talking about Krishna. That's a really nice example for us because we can't see Krishna so much.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Yes, Prabhu?
There was some complexity when the gopis, they were crying when Krishna was leaving. It was vicious. It was not vicious, so they were thinking he shouldn't cry because he's going.
Right. Yeah.
Definitely auspicious. But he's leaving, so they are crying.
Mm. Yeah, the tugging in there, you know. Right, their emotions. I want to cry, but if I cry, that would be inauspicious. It may be a bad omen for Krishna's travel, so let me hold it in. But I can't hold it in. So there's like this battle of emotions going on. Yes. Yeah, that's nice. Anything else striking? I think these two chapters, they go together because just on that point of this struggle or this battle, you could say, we have the Pandavas and their kingdom who are very happy to see Krishna with them. And so they're struggling that, you know, if Krishna leaves us, where are we going to be? What's happening? But then as, you know, we're going to read the first five verses of this chapter, we're going to see the same thing of the Dwarka residents. Where they're, you know, been despondent. Because Krishna had been gone for quite a while. There was, just before the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna went to the marriage of Abhimanyu. And so he's gone from Dwarka at that time. And so when Krishna leaves Dwarka, it's the same scene as what you've just read in this 10th chapter of Krishna leaving Hastinapur. So you see this happening, you know, the devotees are always back and forth. Krishna's leaving, or Krishna's coming. And so this is a nice meditation for us, because in many ways, you know, Krishna is either evident in our mind, or we're endeavoring to remember Krishna, and that the point of the ladies remembering Krishna. That's the real striking part that I felt is that, you know, when we hear about Krishna, when we see Krishna, we experience Krishna. What is the reaction? What happens? Is it like, oh, that was pretty good, and let me get on with my life? No, it was like, okay, let's just talk about Krishna. And so they just started talking about Krishna. You know, they weren't just satisfied to see Krishna. They wanted to talk about Krishna. And by talking, by saying realizations, it becomes fixed in the mind. It becomes more fixed in your consciousness instead of just, you know, maybe a slight contemplation. If you're like speaking about Krishna, presenting Krishna, then it becomes a very fixed portion of your psyche, of your consciousness. So the ladies, they're like, they're just like, wow, yeah. Just imagine, you know, Krishna's leaving us. Look how beautiful he was. Just imagine his wives who get to see him all the time. You know, every day, you know, they get to just imagine that. And so it's not even a, it's not even like a despondent remembrance, like, oh yeah, we're not going to be able to see Krishna anymore. You know, there may be a little bit of that, a little bit of sadness in their heart, but they're like glorifying the devotees that who do get to see Krishna constantly. And this is one of the Vaishnava sentiments that are very, very strong in the Vaishnavas. Like when we hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Narottam Das, when they sing, they, Ha Gauranga Bolite. If I want to be near somebody who would feeling an emotion can say, oh, Gauranga, those are the people I want to be near. So they're the glorification. There's no envy in their glorification. And so there's this feeling. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami's commentary or taking the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he calls it his Bhagavatamrita, he speaks almost precisely in line with these two chapters where Narada is going to the Pandavas and seeing the Pandavas as so fortunate, but the Pandavas are feeling so unfortunate because Krishna only comes when we have troubles and then he leaves us. And so heightened was their ecstasy that Kunti in there says, let's destroy something. Let's make a calamity happen so that Krishna has to come. They're like planning this. These are their plans that Krishna's gone. He went back to Dwarka. He only comes here when there's problems. Let's do something to make a problem so Krishna will come. But then the glorification of the residents of Dwarka is there in the very next chapter of how the residents of Dwarka, so fortunate they are, to daily see Krishna and to be in association with Krishna. And so both appreciations are there, certainly. And we can appreciate each of them, and it will enhance our Krishna consciousness. I'm gonna do this a little differently. We're gonna read the five verses and we'll speak a little bit about Krishna and Krishna's conch shell, and then we're going to concentrate on a particular verse that was very striking to me, and hopefully you as well. So we'll just read the translations, text one, and maybe we could just go around the room and do that. And go ahead and put some feeling into your reading. Don't be shy.
Suta Goswami said, upon reaching the border of his most prosperous metropolis, known as the country of the Antarat Dwarika, the Lord sounded his auspicious conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants.
The white and fat-boweled conch shell, being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. It seemed like a white swan who was playing in the stems of red lotus flowers.
The citizens of Dwarka, having heard that sound which threatens fear personified in the material world, began to run towards him fast, just to have a long-desired audience with the Lord, who is the protector of all devotees.
The citizens arrived before the Lord with their respective presentations, offering them to the fully satisfied and self-sufficient one, who, by his own potency, incessantly supplies others. These presentations were like the offering of a lamp to the sun. Yet the citizens began to speak in ecstatic language to receive the Lord, just as words welcome their guardian and father.
Thank you. Jaya, Sri Govardhana Namine, Ashesha Klesha Nasaya, Paramananda Dayane. So here the description, I'll just to show my neophyte nature, first let me exemplify that. When I got these verses, I thought, and the theme was Krishna's conch shell, because originally I was supposed to give a class yesterday, and the title was amazing. What was the title? Krishna's
Varieties of Krishna's
Service. Yeah, Varieties of Krishna's Service. Then I got Krishna's conch shell, and I was thinking, ah, boy, Krishna's conch shell, you know. All right, so that's just to show that I'm not fully qualified as a bhakta, but Krishna did give me something, and we'll go through that later. But Krishna's conch shell is what is being emphasized here in these verses. And so, as I alluded to, the Dwarka residents were without Krishna, I would say, almost about a year. Because there was the battle of Kurukshetra, then there was some months passing before Bhishma, and then there was, as you heard in the last chapter, you know, Krishna getting ready to leave. And when Krishna leaves someplace, it's not like, okay, I'm going to leave now. And so it's like, you know, you just hear, and then, okay, yes, we'll go, and we're going to get ready to go. So, you know, in a few days we'll have, you know, things prepared and this and that. And day after day after day, Yudhisthira is making up some excuse. Oh, this is not a very good auspicious day to travel, or this, you know, the roads are not good, it's bad weather. So there's all these excuses to keep Krishna there. So it took some time, and I think it was said 6 months. 6 months before he could leave. So he said, I'm leaving, and it takes him 6 months to leave. So it's a long time for the Dwarka residents, and they're thinking, you know, they don't have email and things. They don't know what's really happening so much. You know, they know that Krishna left to assist in annihilation of the miscreants. But not so sure what's happening with Krishna. Where is Krishna? And so every day, and Prabhupada, twice in his purports, he said there, in the verse, dejection, strong dejection, and Prabhupada calls it a deep melancholy. Very like, you know, all right, well, maybe Krishna will come today, and he doesn't come. Then it's like, oh. And the next day, maybe Krishna will come today. No, he doesn't come. So every day they're like, you know, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? It's a nice meditation, but it is also a higher understanding of Krishna consciousness, of feeling Krishna's presence in separation. But still, they want to see Krishna. They're so used to seeing Krishna. And so, you know, the first thing they hear, or the first thing, you know, that happens is they hear this very distinguishable sound, this heralding, trumpeting of Krishna's conch shell. And so, we're going to talk a little bit about Krishna's conch shell itself, history of the Panchajanya. Krishna received this. This is actually a Krishna and Dwarka feature. Krishna didn't have a conch shell in Vrindavan. Krishna blew on some other things in Vrindavan. What were they? Flutes and buffalo horns too. So there was different, a little different sound. But Krishna and Dwarka, when he moved to Mathura first to kill Kamsa, then it was the duty of Vasudeva and Devaki to properly school him. He was just a village boy herding cows. He didn't have education, so-called education, or they thought. They say, oh, well, we have to get him trained up. So he sent him to the school of Sandipani Muni. And we hear in Krishna book so many wonderful things they learn, how to make puzzles, how to sew, how to decorate and braid hair, how to do astrology, everything. Everything was covered. Even magic tricks. I think magic tricks were there too. So. But so then generally at the end of the learning or teachings by the guru, there is some offering from the disciple or the student, and it's called Guru Dakshin, that you have given me this, now I need to, I would like to give you something. So Sunny Panimuni requested, as my Guru Dakshin, some years ago, my son was taken from me from the ocean. The ocean had taken him. He drowned in the ocean. He was taken. So he requested of Krishna, him also knowing a little bit about Krishna, who Krishna is and how he can do such a thing, will you please return, will you please get my son back for me? So Krishna says, yes, we'll do that. So him and Balaram, they went off to the ocean, and he summoned the ocean deity, please come. You have taken the son of my teacher. I want him back immediately. Please deliver him. And the ocean said, well, actually, it wasn't me. It was a demon by the name of Panchajanya. He is living within the ocean in this huge conch shell, in the shape of this conch. Or the conch were his bones. And so Krishna dove down. He found the Panchajanya, and he dispatched him. But there was no son to be found. And so what usually happens upon the death of a soul, they are brought before Yamaraj. So, however, Krishna didn't want to just leave. He saw this magnificent conch shell. That, hey, this is a pretty good conch shell too. So let me take this conch shell. And so that's how he obtained the Panchajanya. And so he then went to Yamaraj. Yamaraj's abode, or Samyavani is his abode. And, you know, we know a little bit of Yamaraj. He is the lord of death, or the person who metes out punishment to the conditioned souls. And he has many different places for different souls. Depending on the sins they've committed, there are different rooms, you could say, or different planets where they would go and suffer a particular type of misery based on their activities. And so when Krishna came to Samyavani, just on the outskirts, he wanted, it was the first time, he blows the conch shell. And it was this amazing sound. And it's described that it was not only just this tumultuous sound, but it was a liberating sound. And in the Skanda Purana, I found this quote. The acharyas say, when Krishna blew this new conch shell, the hell known as Asipatravana, which is filled with trees that have like razor sharp leaves. I don't know if you've seen it. I lived in Puerto Rico for some time, and up in the rainforest there is a tree actually that has these very sharp leaves, and if you just brush against it, it you know, cuts you. So I imagine it's probably a little worse than that even. But anyway, razor sharp, sword-like leaves on its trees, and they all just fell off the trees. So those trees had no more effect in that hell. And then another hell called Rorava, and they have these Ruru beasts, they're called. And they're very ferocious beasts. The Ruru beasts became docile and very, they dispersed and became docile, like nice little pets. So, and then the Bhairava hell lost its fearfulness. And in the Kumbhipaka hell, which I guess is, they said all cooking stopped there. So that hell must have been, you know, where they, you know, sauteed the different persons. So all that cooking stopped. And so, and then the Skanda Purana sums it up, said all their sinful reactions were eradicated. And all inhabitants attain liberation and attain the spiritual world just by the sound of this Panchajanya. Now, we'll again, if we look at this a little analytically, well, was it the Panchajanya that liberated them, or was it Krishna blowing the Panchajanya that liberated them. So obviously, I think we know it is Krishna's blowing the Panchajanya. This is one of the points that Prabhupada will be bringing up in these purport, that actually, I'll just save that. We'll get to that. Additionally, we hear about the Panchajanya in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, where, you know, Duryodhana is despondent. He's getting preached to by Drona and Bhishma. And all right, we're all right. We're going to be okay. And so Duryodhana is accusing them of being too affectionate to the Pandavas and such. And so Bhishma and Drona try to give him as much encouragement as possible. So after their little discussion, then they pull out their conch shells and they blast it. And for Kshatriyas on a battlefield, this bugling of a conch shell is supposed to give, you know, when we hear a conch shell, it, you know, it kind of like, you know, gets us revved up. Okay, something's happening here. Something's going to happen. We're going to see Krishna, right? So something's going to happen. And so they're blowing these conch shells, and Bhishma, Drona blows his, and Kripa blows his, and Shalya blows his, and Bhagirath, and all these great Maharajas, great, great generals, are all blowing these together. And so we don't have, you know, when we hear one conch shell, it's pretty good. But when you hear many, just like in some of the bigger temples, if you've been to Vrindavan, when there's greeting of the deities, there's three conch shells. Each altar has their own pujari. And when all three of them are blown, it's just amazing. So imagine, you know, hundreds of conch shells going off at once. This tumultuous sound, along with kettle drums and everything, and it's huge ruckus. Like thunder, sometimes when you have a thunderstorm, these big rolling thunders that just, wow, it just really kind of grabs you. And so, this unplanned, or maybe unaware of the result of this, this became the original Battle of the Bands. So we can imagine Krishna and Arjuna, they were hearing this, and, you know, Krishna or Arjuna must have looked at each other, you know, kind of like, well, that was nothing, you know. So Krishna pulls out his Panchajanya, and we'll hear we'll go more in depth of how Krishna's holding the Panchajanya, but when he blows it, it's a whole different sound. One thing I liked is some of the drawings I've actually seen, they have holsters for these conch shells. So that's pretty cool. It's like, yeah, you talking to me, you know? So he pulls out the conch shell and unholsters the conch shell, and so he blows it, and we hear, you know, the Panchajanya and the Devadatta and the Megapushpa and the Pondrum, all these conch shells are, and, you know, Prabhupada points out very, very clearly that these sounds of these conch shells are different. First of all, we've already heard Krishna's conch shell is delivering liberation, immediate liberation. But then, obviously, with the devotees who are very intimately united with Krishna, their conch shells similarly give some transcendental sound vibration. And then those serving those devotees, the other generals. So it was a different type of sound. It wasn't, although it was tumultuous too, but it was shattering. Shattering to their hearts, Prabhupada says, to the Kauravas, and enlivening to the hearts of the Pandavas. So, if we look at the contrast of those conch shells, we can think of that when we go more in depth and focus on verse number 2. So if we could bring the Sanskrit up for that one, and we'll chant this together. And just to note, as we're reading this, you can see that the verse in the meter is different than the preceding and the following verses. And it is very poetic. The Sanskrit is very poetic. Prabhupada's translation is very poetic. And his purport is even more poetic. So like I was saying, I was a little maybe disappointed from the two different subjects but when I came across this verse, somehow Krishna woke me up and said, wow, this is a jewel. This is one of those jewels in the Bhagavatam that, you know, you find every once in a while. So although I cannot eloquently chant, we'll try to chant these. Sa uch kashe dhava lo daro daro. Apyu kramas ya dara shona shonima. Tadma yamana Karakanja Sampute. Yathabja Kande Kalahamsa Uchvana. Sa Ucha Kashe Dhavalo Dharo Dharo. Apyu kramasya dhara shona shonima. Tadmaya mana karakanja sampute. Yathabja kande kalahamsa utsvana. Sa uchakashe dhavalo daro daro. Apyu kramasya dhara shona shonima. Tadmayamana karakanja sampute. Sa ucha kashe dhavalo daro daro. Apyu kramasya dhana shona shonima. Tadmaya mana karakanja sampute. Yathabja kande kalahamsa utsava. Sa ucha kashe dhavalo daro daro. Abhyu kramasyanam soni soni ma. Tadmayamana karakanja sampute. Yathabja kande kalahamsa utsvana. Sa ucha kashe dhavalo daro daro. Apyu kramasya dhara shona shonima. Tadmaya mana karakanja sampute. So sa that. Uchakase became brilliant. Dhavala Udara, white and fat boweled. Dhara, conch shell. Api, although it is so. Urukramasya, of the great adventurer. Adharashona, by the transcendental quality of his lips. Shonima, reddened. Dhadmayamana, being sounded. Kardakanja Sampute, being caught by the grip of the lotus hand. Yata, as it is. Abjakande, by the stems of lotus flowers. Kalahamsa, ducking swan. Utsvana, loudly sounding. Translation. The white and fat-boweled conch shell, being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of red lotus flowers. So this is an amazing description, and Prabhupada will bring it out further in the purport. But let's just look at the imagery first of, you know, we've seen conch shells, and so the conch shells are generally pure white, and certainly Krishna's conch shell was pure white. Dava Udra, white and fat, fat-boweled, very big. Lots of swirls. Then we imagine, we're being asked to imagine this. Vyasadeva is giving this description, this very detailed description, so that we can imagine Krishna holding this conch shell. Karda Kanja Sampute, he is holding in his grip. He has the conch shell in his grip. Whether he holds it like this or like this, still we see his fingers surrounding the conch shell. And Krishna's fingers are also described as reddish, especially the tips of his fingers. When he brings it to his lips are also described as reddish. There are different portions of Krishna's body that are described as reddish. And not lipstick reddish, but transcendental, effulgently red. So when he brings the conch shell to his lips, that transcendental effulgence is reflecting onto the whiteness of the conch shell. And it appears to be reddened. And it looks, and because Krishna's hands, his Kanja Sampute, lotus hands, his hands are soft as well. Not like these, you know, kind of puffy, wrinkly, scarred, rough, you know, hands. They're soft, like the very soft lotus flower. How many have actually seen and experienced a lotus flower? Wow, quite a few. So the texture of them is very wonderful. It's almost porous, but it feels very smooth and very soft. And just the way the light reflects on the petals itself is just so beautiful. Almost porous, like we have pores in our skin, is almost porous like that. So his hand, his very soft fingers surrounding this conch shell, this white conch shell, and then bringing it to his lips. And it appears, in this metaphorical understanding, it looks like this conch shell, or the white swan, in the stems of his fingers. Look at the stems, they're playing within there. So it's a very beautiful depiction to attract our, like, wow, This is very attractive. Just to see Krishna, this very simple act of blowing a conch shell is not only transcendental, but it is very beautiful. And when we hear Gayanti, you know, Shrimvanti, Gayanti, these things should be heard and sung about. This is the nature of this verse, to sing about just this act of Krishna, to blow the conch shell. And so, here Prabhupada's purport, which is also very, if we look at it, it's like almost prose. It's very poetic and very nicely put. And then also bring us to a very deep understanding of Krishna and his material realm, or this realm where we are in, and how we can relate to it. We'll go through it slowly. The redness of the white conch shell due to the lip touch of the Lord is a symbol of spiritual significance. So he's bringing, when I read that, I thought, okay, I better read this again, the verse again, because when Prabhupada says this is significant, you know, we should listen, you know. He's saying this is very significant. You know, what is the significance of Krishna touching this conch shell with his lips? The Lord is all spirit, and matter is ignorance of this spiritual existence. So this line in itself may be difficult just to put it together. But the Lord, obviously, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, embodiment of all pure knowledge, bliss, his body is not like our body. It is fully transcendental. But matter, so what is matter? Matter is also Krishna's energy. Parashya Shaktaya Vividaiva Shruyate. It is Krishna's energy, but it is separate from Krishna in that it is mixing with the modes of material nature and takes on a different composition. Although it is still Krishna. And then Prabhupada says, factually there is nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment. And this spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. So this is quite a statement. Factually, he's saying there is no matter. We're saying there's matter, spirit, this is duality. Factually, it is all part of Krishna. And it is our understanding or our use of the matter that would bring it to light. That, yeah, if I'm using such and such thing for sense gratification, is matter. But if I'm using it for Krishna, it is spiritual. And Prabhupada again and again would bring this to us. Over and over again, he would say how the difference is only the consciousness, but it is all Krishna's energy. The Lord is present in every particle of all existence, and he can manifest his presence in anyone. So again, more of this, that Krishna is present everywhere. Certainly, it is his energy. It's separate energy, but it is his energy. And then this is the real kicker here. By ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord. And the Paramahamsa, or the supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. That's quite a sentence. And it is full of information and full of deep spiritual understanding. Just those first two words, the ardent love. This is, it's not just, you know, by social pretext or something that, you know, yes, I love, but it is ardent. It is really intense. It is intense love. Of devotional service. So that is how devotional service is to be offered to Krishna. Not that, did you do your service, Prabhu? Yeah, I did my service. That's not what this is getting to. What Prabhupada is trying to bring us to. He wants the service to be with ardent love, would concentrate, would focus, with, you know, awake, being awake. And so this duality, we sometimes see this duality. I found this very nice summing up of this difference between the material energy and the spiritual energy and how we can see it. And this is from the second canto of Prabhupada's purport. He says, being an emanation of the glancing potency of Narayan, the whole material creation is non-different from him. So we'll hear in the second canto, as Krishna creates, when he's creating, he has his different energies creating, and simply by glancing over the Mahatattva, it goes into action. But this glance, here is detailed, by his glance, that glance, similar to his blowing of a conch shell, is fully transcendental and fully imbibes what he's glancing at with transcendental potency. So it's non-different from him. But because it is the effect of his external energy, Bhairanga Maya, and is aloof from the internal potency, Atma Maya, the whole material creation is different from him at the same time. So he glances over, it's his energy, it's imbued with him, but it is separate. And by its separation, this is the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva that Lord Chaitanya is, that is simultaneously one and different from Krishna. It's his energy, but as it is used, it is either spiritual or material. The example given in this verse very nicely is that of a dreaming man. The dreaming man creates many things in his dream, and thus he himself becomes the entangled seer of the dream and is also affected by the consequences. This material creation is also exactly a dreamlike creation of the Lord, but he, being the transcendental supersoul, is neither entangled nor affected by the reactions of such a dreamlike creation. He is always in his transcendental position, but essentially he is everything, and nothing is apart from him. As a part of him, one should therefore concentrate on him only, without deviation, otherwise one is sure to be overcome by the potencies of the material creation, one after another. So this is understanding this oneness and difference, the material energy. Yeah, the material energy is very powerful. Krishna tells Arjuna, it's very difficult to overcome. But by engaging in devotional service or coming in contact, just as the conch shell comes in contact with Krishna's lips, it transforms into, you know, a different looking thing. It no longer looks like a conch shell. It looks like a swan playing in the lotus stems. And so similarly, when we are engaging in devotional service, we no longer just look like, you know, bodies in this, you know, bones and skin, but we can become transcendental. Prabhupada would give this a lot, this example, how his devotees, they look different, they act different, is because we're in contact. And in the worship of the deities, it's described, when you clean the deities, when you dress the deities and beautify the deities, you yourself become beautified. It is the same thing. By coming in contact with Krishna, we become transcendentally situated as well. So, I just was really touched by this verse in purport, and I hope, you know, that imagery we can keep in our minds. Then I wanted to read a part of the purport to text 3, which kind of brings it more in a practical sense. The verse again of 3 is, the citizens of Dwarka, having heard that sound which threatens fear personified in the material world, right? Yamaraja's kingdom was practically upended by Krishna blowing the conch shell. All those trees, they all had to grow back razor sharp things again. Everything was destroyed. Yamaraj was frightened. So when they heard that, they all ran toward Krishna very quickly. Because why are they running toward, when they hear a tooting or a conch shell, it was very distinguishable because that conch shell was Krishna's conch shell. So it was very distinguishable. It wasn't just somebody else's conch shell. So they began to run toward him fast, just to have a long-desired audience with the Lord, who is the protector of the devotees. The Prabhupada says in this purport, it's very, very nice, these two paragraphs. The citizens of Dwarka were thus in a state of melancholy due to the Lord's absence from the transcendental city, as much as we are put in a state of melancholy at night because of the absence of the sun. The sound heralded by Lord Krishna was something like the heralding of the sunrise in the morning. So all the citizens of Dwarka awoke from a state of slumber because of the sunrise of Krishna. So this goes a little bit with the previous purport we're reading from the second canto of like the dreaming person. The dreaming person, he's in a different state. He's a different mind practically going on. Everything is different for them. But he is affected by it. He becomes affected by it in his consciousness. And so when he wakes up, he is no longer affected by it. So just like when we go to at night, when it becomes dark, sometimes we become fearful. We're afraid of the dark. When the sun comes, the fear is immediately diminished. So fear, being fearful of material nature is okay, but by becoming in contact, but if we keep in contact with Krishna, then there should be no fear. And this will be talked about a little more even. So all the citizens of Dwarka awoke from a state of slumber because of the sunrise of Krishna, and they all hastened toward him just to have an audience. The devotees of the Lord know no one else as protector. The sound of the Lord is identical with the Lord, as we have tried to explain by the non-dual position of the Lord. So this again, this achintya beta beta tattva, simultaneously oneness and difference. The sound of Krishna, his absolute nature, by hearing Krishna's names, remembering Krishna, as the ladies of Hastinapur on the roofs, they were remembering Krishna, so it was just like Krishna still being with them, and the citizens of Dwarka or the gopis, just by coming in contact with Krishna's name, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's form, Krishna's paraphernalia, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's Bhagavatam, we are associating directly with Krishna. We get that absolute connection. The material existence of our present state is full of fear. Out of the four problems of material existence, namely food problem, shelter problem, fear problem, and mating problem, the fear problem gives us more trouble than the others. We are always fearful due to our ignorance of the next problem. The whole material existence is full of problems, and thus the fear problem is always prominent. This is due to our association with the illusory energy of the Lord, known as Maya or external energy. Yet all fear is vanished as soon as there is the sound of the Lord, represented by His holy name, and it was sounded by Lord Chaitanya in the following 16 words. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We can take advantage of these sounds and be free from all threatening problems of material existence. So again, this, to tie it all together, the material energy and the spiritual energy, we understand, at least theoretically, that these are all energies of Krishna. But when we're in contact with Krishna, then we need not fear the material energy. Although the material energy is fearful, it is very fearful to be entangled in the material energy again. So we want to be touched, just like, you know, when Krishna touches the conch shell with his lips, we want to feel that touch. And so it is our endeavor actually to do that, to be in touch with Krishna by hearing Krishna's glories, chanting Krishna's name, associating with Krishna's devotees, doing some ardent devotional service. I want to read that whole sentence again because it's it's quite a lot to take in. By ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord, and the Paramahamsa, or the supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. So, yeah, our desire, when we're doing devotional service, our desire is that, yes, Krishna, you know, I want to be that ducking swan, that swan who's sporting. And where are they sporting? It's not just for sport or for competition or for conquering, but it's just to enjoy with Krishna in his, either in his hand as a conch shell or in the stems of his lotus-like feet. That is the desire of the devotee, to always be going for that nectar, for that goal. And in that way, there's no fear. What is it? Abhaya Charanara Vindare, by taking shelter in the bhajan, by applying ourselves in Krishna's service, there's no fear. So, we are out of time. We can end here with any questions or comments. Gopal.
Just about, it's a little side thing about one of the things you were mentioning about all the various hells.
Yeah.
In the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, it's just a really very small chapter at the end of the fifth canto about a description of all the hellish planets. Mm. And then in the sixth canto, immediately, you tell the story of Ajimal, how just by remembering Lord Narayan at the time of death was rescued by the Vishnudutas.
Yeah.
But, you know, but then again, if people don't believe in hell, we'll just look at Afghanistan or something like that.
So yeah.
Just to kind of put that whole thing in context. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. I guess I gave a little glimpse of the fifth canto, which sounds quite magnificent. Yeah, I mean, there is hell on this planet, and there is hell right in our heads sometimes. So it is everywhere. That and that is the fear of the material energy. When we are associating with material energy and giving credence or giving praise or aspiring toward material things, that, what is it? It creates a hellish mentality. So whether it's the fantastic hells of the fifth canto, or if it's war is hell, or if it's, you know, right in our head, our mind being the cause of a hellish mentality, it's all there. It's freely available for anyone who wants it. Just walk outside the door. Yeah. But then, you know, when it's 98 degrees with 100% humidity, it's pretty hellish too.
I had a question about the words used for material energy. There's Prakriti, Mahatattva, and Pradhana. Is there a significant difference between those three words? What
they signify? That's, yeah, we could get into that. There's quite a bit. Prakriti, the material, when we say Prakriti, the material nature, or we are also part of that Prakriti.
The body is part of the
Yeah.
Prakriti.
So that is material. It is all part of, again, the Mahatattva is the amalgamation or culmination of it all, and it disperses it. And the Pradhan, unmanifest, you know, so it's, those are very technical terms, and we can get our very technical Prabhu involved here.
Basically, before the thing was differentiated out,
Yeah, there's divisions. Is that third canto? Mostly.
Yeah.
Third and second canto. We can get all that information. Very technical. You had a question, Prabhu?
So, Panchajanya is Krishna's conch shell. Is he Vishnu holding a conch shell?
Well, Krishna and Dwarka is manifestation of Vasudev. So, I can look it up, but I would assume that the Vasudev feature of Krishna in Dwarka is the same as the Vishnu feature.